You are listening to a podcast of the Geek.io Media Network. For all of our shows and more, visit geek-io.net. And to help support the network, head over to patreon.com/geek.io.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast, Life of an Accounting Droid. I'm your host, as always, Neil. So got a very exciting week for you this week. Lots of different news stories coming out. Things getting updated. People buying stuff. And all of that good stuff, so I will jump right into it. Not too much in the entertainment news for this week, so just a few things I was watching, one new release for a streaming service. Other than that, it's just a TV series review and a Star Wars review, so that's really about it for that half. So with that, I'll jump into the first half. So for this week's episode number 12, the theme is mergers and acquisitions. So basically, with all the updates and purchases going on and transitioning from one mobile device to another, I thought this would be an appropriate theme to have, just because it kind of relates to how or what mergers and acquisitions are used for. So ideally, a merger or acquisition is done to create more value with the combination of the two companies that is more than the sum of the value of those two companies individually or as a given sum of those two companies. So if company A is worth $2 million and company B is worth $3 million, then ideally the merging of the two companies should be valued at more than $5 million. So ideally you want it, so basically you want to have that merger or acquisition be worth your while. Sometimes you want to combine forces just to consolidate your foothold in an industry, but it's always a fine line to walk there because it can, depending on how many competitors you have, also be an antitrust or monopolistic issue. Mergers and acquisitions can also be done for one company to buy another in order to create a more competitive, cost-effective company. So sometimes rather than creating additional value, you might also find a way to reduce your other overhead costs, sometimes because competing with this other company or multiple other companies in the industry costs too much, so you want to reduce that a little bit. So your value still goes up, but in a different way. Rather than on the revenue side or the sales side, you're looking at your costs and payables and that sort of thing. So then you might be wondering why you have two terms for a similar concept, and that is because a merger and acquisition is actually, or they are actually two separate concepts, but in different ways to cover a similar ideal. So a merger is done when two companies combine to go forward as a single company. So both companies agree that it would be in their best interest to work together and combine, so they go forward and basically they figure out what the value is, what the benefits would be, whether it's worth pursuing and all of that stuff. So that's kind of where mergers come into play. As far as an acquisition, it is one where a company takes over another company and clearly establishes itself as a new owner. So you may have heard of a term called a hostile takeover. So essentially a company will start purchasing shares and generally acquiring another company, and when it owns a majority stakehold in that company or majority stake in that company, it'll figure out a way to buy it out and take it over. There are other various other terms to describe this. Some are not so bad, some are actually good, but it's a way to integrate the two companies a little bit more smoothly, for example, to ensure that the transition goes well. For me, these concepts are generally brought well or presented well in Wall Street 1, the original movie with Michael Douglas, so it's definitely worth a watch if you want to check it out. It's kind of more on the side of the hostile takeover acquisitions and all that side of things, but it does generally have a good, as far as I'm concerned, I like the premise for how they present it. So with that in mind, I'll jump into this week's news, and if my voice sounds a little bit different, I forgot to mention this earlier, I am feeling a little bit under the weather, so if the pacing seems a little bit weird or my voice is rough or I cough a lot, that is why. So with that being said and the theme in place, I will jump into the Android news. So this week, Microsoft bought the Android lock screen app Echo. So it's Echo is one of those lock screen apps that helps present your notifications on your lock screen. So rather than having to swipe down on your notification drawer or not being able to because you have a secure lock screen, Echo, for example, does something a little bit different by presenting or having a widget that shows your notifications. So if you want to interact with them, you can select it and use it that way. So if that interests you, you can still use it. It's still available in Google Play, but it's one of those acquisitions by Microsoft to help more than likely help them transition over to the Android ecosystem. Wikipedia got an update that now has tabbed browsing, so you can have multiple articles open at the same time, and also have a new thing called a link preview. So rather than automatically following a link when you click on it, so let's say you're looking up a TV show and you're looking up episodes, or you're reading an article and you want to see more information about a link that's available in that article, rather than following it directly, it will open up a little window from the bottom of your screen and show you a snippet of what is in that article, kind of like a definition or a preview, a summary, or a summary of what's in that article. And if you want to then proceed to the full article to read it, you can do so. If not, you can just hit back and it will disappear. So it all depends on how much you want to see of that additional information, but it is a pretty nifty addition already. The Sphero BB-8 app for Android got an update this week to now have voice commands, so you can control your Sphero or your BB-8 in a couple of different ways. So things like patrol and whatever the other modes are, but you can now control it a little bit better and more easily with your voice. For those of you who use Amazon Music, it got updated to now support Android Auto, so if you have that available in your car, then look out for that. Google announced via Google Plus the first Android Developer Summit for November 23rd. It's going to be a summit to help explain more deeply the technical more deep technical code and programming and development for Android, as well as provide some networking for developers. So if you want to get to know other people in the Android development community, then it may be for you. In other news, though, the Samburu National Reserve in Kenya got Google Street View, so if you wanted to check it out, then you can now do that. Chrome got updated to now support Facebook push notifications, so if you see a little pop-up that says that Facebook wants to be able to send you push notifications, then that is what that's for, so you can get those as well. I haven't seen them come through completely or every single time, so I'm not sure how well it works, but I have seen it come through one or two times, so it is pretty nifty if you are using Facebook and Chrome. CBS All Access was released for Android TV, so if you watch anything on CBS, for example, Extant, then you should be able to get it on your Android TV now. Google is facing an antitrust investigation in Russia as of this week by their competitor Yandex for pre-installing their apps on Android, so it's kind of a competitive issue that I guess they feel unfair about, so we'll see what comes of that. Spotify is getting an update with a new feature called Spotify Running. It's an update that should be rolling out. I haven't seen it come through yet, but it has started rolling out. Basically, what it does is it generates playlists based on your location and how fast you run, and it uses your GPS, so it paces the music based on that. So if you want a random playlist with music that suits how fast you're exercising, then this may be for you. So once I see that update, I will definitely give it a shot. Apple released their first official Android app this week called Move to iOS. So if you want to, or if you need help moving your contacts and information over to Apple's iOS system, then this app should help you out. And of course, if you're wondering about the low ratings, a number of them, I imagine, or at least what it looks like, are people who are trolling the app just because it's an Apple app on Android to move away. But from the few reviews that I did see is that seemed like they were legitimately reviewing the app. Seemed like it was I don't want to say pretty good, but it seemed hit or miss that generally it worked, but it did have its issues. So we'll see if there's updates coming soon. But In case you're wondering why it had such a low rating, last I checked a day or two ago, it was, I think, around 1.8 or 1.9. So be wary. I mean, it might not be perfect, but there may be issues at the moment still. But a lot of the reviews are not accurate reviews, I imagine, but they are very, very entertaining to read. Nova Launcher Beta was released or updated this week to now have the ability to resize icons so they look like they're the same size. So basically this update or this feature aims to normalize how your icons look. So some icons are round, some icons are square, and so when you have them at their normal size, they look very different. With this update, it basically checks what the shape of your icons are and figures out how to size them so they look like they're, or at least they appear like they're the same size. It's kind of like fitting a square icon or a square block in a circle by keeping the square the same size. I did actually install it, and it does actually look like it's pretty nifty. The icons are a little bit smaller, but they all do actually appear to be the same size, so it is actually a pretty cool feature. And if it actually bothers you or it's something that interests you, then definitely check it out. The Google app was updated this week for Android 5.1 for Android M Marshmallow to add the Now on Tap feature. So if you are running Marshmallow on your Nexus device, then check it out. It has also been updated with a new app drawer for prior versions of Android, so look out for that. This week, Amazon had a couple of new announcements. Namely, there's a new Fire TV, which supports 4K video, improved voice search with Alexa, and a 64-bit processor. And in case you're wondering about this price, it is actually the same price as the prior Fire TV. And also, if you're wondering about or thinking about purchasing one in the coming weeks or months, there was a rumor that started circulating that a new version of the Chromecast might be coming out in the next couple of weeks. Probably by the end of September is what the current, September 2015 is what the current rumor is. So we'll see what happens or if there even is a new one or what the story is with that. But just something to consider if you can't decide between a Fire TV, Fire TV Stick, or a Chromecast. Amazon also announced a new Kindle Fire in the 7-inch range. So basically the screen size is 7 inches. It has a 1.3 GHz quad-core processor, 1 GB of RAM, 8 GB of storage, and micro SD card support for up to 128 GB of storage, and it costs $49.99. So essentially the specs are more or less the same as the original Kindle Fire, with the only noticeable difference offhand being that it does still have an external micro SD card support. But other than that, as far as I remember, the specs are probably about on par. It probably is using newer hardware, so it is a lot smoother. But the price is good. It's more for budget-friendly and kid-friendly purposes. And the interesting thing I saw about the announcement was that you can now buy it in a six-pack and get a special rate, as far as I can tell. So if you want to buy one for the entire family, then you get a great deal there. But that is all for this particular segment, so with that I'll jump into the other tech news for this week. So to start it off, the Facebook app for iOS and mobile, and as far as I could tell as of when I started recording this episode, that the Android version has it too. But you can now customize your newsfeed to select which friends and pages posts show up first in your newsfeed. So basically if you want to see page posts first or certain friends above others or certain groups of friends post first, for example, maybe even family, then you can go into settings, newsfeed, and prioritize who to see first, and you can select which friends and pages and family you want to see first in your newsfeed. And then you can also unfollow people to hide their posts from your newsfeed as well. So if you don't want to get regular updates from people, then that is also an option. I did try it out, and it is actually pretty cool. It does give you, at least on the web version, that little thing that says that this is a page that you wanted to follow or see a post first from. So that way you kind of get that your own customized prioritized newsfeed. Following Amazon's recent update to allow downloading movies from Instant Video to view offline, Epix has added that ability to their app for downloading movies and TV shows for offline viewing. So if you use the Epix service, that is now a feature. Launch Center Pro version 2.5 was released for iOS this week. It now supports iOS 9, adds a Today widget, and supports around 100,000 more apps. So if you want to customize your Launch Center with various additional apps to quickly launch, I think it looked like from its notification drawer, then that is now available. Amazon Prime got an update this week to now have same-day delivery in Los Angeles. So basically what you get is a two-hour delivery, or the two-hour delivery is free, and one-hour delivery is $7.99, and that's $7.99. I haven't seen what the terms and conditions are for that, so if there's probably a minimum order, or you have to be a Prime member or something along those lines. So definitely read the fine print before you start, but that is now available for our Los Angeles citizens. In other Amazon Prime news, members also now get 6 months of the Washington Post for free. This is a part of the deal that Amazon now owns the Washington Post. So if in case you want that newspaper, then that is, you get 6 months free, and then you get a discounted rate afterwards as well. I believe this is for the digital version. So if you want a digital newspaper with a great rate, then this may be the way to go. This week, iOS 9 was also released for all iOS users, so in case you have a device that supports it, definitely get that update. iMovie was updated this week to now have support for 4K video editing on the iPhone 6S, 6S Plus, and the iPad Pro. So if you have the 4K video to edit, these three devices will support it. Hulu got an update for the iPad this week. I'm guessing the iPad Pro, but whichever one support the multi-window or have multi-window support, which I think is an iOS 9 feature, but don't quote me on that. But basically, it now has the ability to support picture-in-picture viewing, so now you can watch Hulu videos and use other apps at the same time, so you can be productive and watch TV shows and movies at the same time. HTC has made a back-end update to add their push notification service to Google Play. So if you have an HTC One M7, for example, and you see that push notification service update, it's going to now be updated via Google Play for back-end updates for the HTC's various apps. This week, the Google Glass team was renamed to Project Aura, that's A-U-R-A, and not to be confused with Project Aura, that's A-R-A for modular devices. So in case you see two different sets of stories with a similar name, that's kind of what's going on there. In other news, though, the Honda Civic 2016 has been added to the list to get AirPlay and Android Auto media devices built in, so in case you've been thinking about getting a new Civic and you can manage to wait till the 2016 models come out, then look out for that to get AirPlay or Android Auto. And finally, Pocket for iOS got an update for, I'll say iOS 9 since I think that's where all the features lie, but I'm not sure. But it now has more integration with Spotlight Search and picture-in-picture support. So if you've saved videos in Pocket, you can watch those videos and do other things at the same time. But that is all for this segment. So after the short break, I'll jump into the brief entertainment news, the TV show review, the game review, and the Star Wars review. Life of an Accounting Droid is brought to you by you, because you can now help and support the show in three awesome and excellent ways. The first is by simply visiting patreon.com/patelN01 and check out some of the great milestone goals and rewards you get by simply donating as much as you're able, be it $1, $5, $20, whatever you feel comfortable with, to help the show expand in ways like adding more posts to the feed, an Android app, and removing ads, that sort of thing. So definitely check it out. That's patreon.com/patelN01. You can also get some great deals and discounts by visiting geek-io.net/support. You can get discounts on tweaked audio headphones, so you get some great audio while you listen to podcasts, movies, music, whatever have you. Or even by getting a discount on great security software provided by ProXPN. So definitely check that out. It's definitely worth your while, especially if you're on the geeky, nerdy side of things. Especially if you want to show that fandom and geekiness by wearing a t-shirt provided by T-Fury. So that's geek-io.net/support. Now, finally, let's say you love this show, you want to hear more and listen to more shows like it, you can visit patreon.com/geekio or visit geek-io.net and check out more shows like this and help support the network, help it expand and grow, help us host, do more and provide you with more and continued great content. That's patreon.com/geekio. Thanks for listening, and now back to the show. And welcome back to the episode, everybody. Pretty straightforward entertainment section for this week. Not too much in the news that I could find or anything of interest, so pretty quick thing there. Rewatched an old movie, watched another TV show because of a meme, started a new show that I actually haven't seen and is on my TV list of shame. I actually did get a chance to play a game that I mentioned last week, and then I finished watching seasons for the TV show, so all in all, a pretty eventful week of things to be able to, games to play, TV shows to watch, and things like that. So with that, I will jump right into it. So for the few bits of news, for those of you who are Sex and the City fans, the complete series is now available as part of Amazon Instant Video, so if you have Amazon Prime, you can watch the entire series on the go, download it for offline viewing, all of that good stuff. So that is now available. Recently, there has been the meme going around for Star Trek with Captain Picard and his saying for "there are four lights." And I actually honestly didn't know where that came from, how it got started, or any of that. So I did some research, found the episode that episodes that it belonged to, and I watched them. So "there are four lights" actually comes from Star Trek The Next Generation Season 6. I didn't make note of the episode numbers, but the episode titles are Chain of Command Part 1 and Chain of Command Part 2. Quick summary of the episodes is basically Captain Picard is relieved of duty of the Enterprise and sent on a secret mission. And another newer captain is given the... another captain is given control of Enterprise, so they talk about what happens, or they show what happens on Picard's mission and how the crew reacts to their new captain. So overall, a pretty good couple of episodes. I actually really enjoyed it, and it did back up the whole "there are four lights," which was kind of funny. The situation that it's in is actually not funny at all, but I can see how it picked up and all that stuff. So definitely worth a watch if you want, if you have an hour and a half or so to kill. So that's Chain of Command Part 1 and 2 from Season 6 of Star Trek The Next Generation. Continuing on the Star Trek front, I did want to continue watching all of the Star Trek movies on Amazon Instant Video. I did have a chance to watch the first three, but for some reason the fourth one is not on Amazon Instant Video, and I was waiting for that. But seeing as I wanted something to watch, I decided to skip it, and I watched Star Trek V: The Final Frontier, which, in my opinion, I would have assumed would have been the last Star Trek movie, or at least the last one with this crew, but they still had Star Trek VI, and I think that was the last one, but they had one more, I believe, with this crew, so... Of course, now that I think about it, I'm probably totally wrong. But in any case, it was a decent enough movie. I didn't really like how slow it was. It actually reminded me quite a bit of Star Trek The Motion Picture, mainly because it just seemed really slow. They had its bits of action and things like that, but they had a lot of the sweeping shots and things like that, and a lot of focus on individual scenes. So, granted, it didn't feel as long as the first one, but it still could have had more action, more Star Trek, or less of the spacing between the scenes. Finally, I have had a chance to finally start watching Firefly. I have heard quite a bit of it. It's been on my list of things to watch. I didn't actually realize it was on Amazon Instant Video until recently. So I figured since I wasn't watching anything else at the moment, I'll start watching that. And I'm actually very intrigued. I enjoyed the first episode very well. So the first episode is titled Serenity, which is the name of the Firefly class ship that is a focus of the crew, or that the crew travels around on. So definitely worth watching. I did actually enjoy it, so I will continue watching the rest of the season. If it lives up to how much I've heard about it, hopefully it'll leave me wishing there were actually more seasons than just the one. So We'll see how that goes, but that's the current season and show that I am on. So with that, I will jump into this week's game review. So last week I made note that I tried to play Star Wars Uprising and I actually was having trouble logging into the game. So I did actually was able to finally log in using Google Play Games, and I had a chance to play a couple of or a few levels. I'm actually hooked already. So basically, if you don't know what the game is about or what the point of it is that it's basically a role-playing game from the point of view of a smuggler. The story takes place between Star Wars episodes 6, Return of the Jedi, and episode 7, The Force Awakens. So I guess depending on how far you progress, we'll get to see exactly kind of what's going on in the Empire, what's the fallout is as far as the destruction of the second Death Star, the death of the Emperor, the death of Darth Vader, so all of that. So essentially the story starts you off in the Anoa system, where Bespin or where Cloud City is. You play a smuggler who messes up a shipment for another smuggler named Happy Dap. I wasn't too much on that particular smuggler, but basically you start off their first few levels paying off your debt to him. And you have to, I'm still at the point where I am paying off the debt to him, so you have to complete different missions, level up, gain experience, all of that good stuff. So even if I wanted to try and spoil it, I really can't, but that's basically what it is. As far as getting into the game, you start off by first logging in. You can use the Kabam account, the company that is developing the game with Lucasfilm, or you can sign in with Google Play Games. After that, you'll set up your character as a human, Zabrak, or Iridonian, I believe the third race is, and then set up as a male or female. I went the route of a Zabrak, and you can change various things like the hair color, tattoos, and skin color. So once you've set the one you like, you then set your first and last name. Once you're done with that, you're all set. You jump right into the game. Your character is playing with, if you're, I assume it's, since I'm on the male side, that you're playing it with your sister. If you play a female, you're playing with your brother as your initial companion who's giving you advice and all of that good stuff. So you'll jump into the game. The shipment is messed up, so now you have to escape. And you learn the different tools and tricks on how to play the game. So doing the double roll, rapid fire, and things like that. And then completing different missions for Happy. As you go along, initially you'll get the instructions also on how to upgrade your equipment. So as you gain money and pick up various items to upgrade your equipment, you'll be able to do things like equip a helmet and a vest for protection, arm gauntlets, so get a different weapon, and then also upgrade them so you get more effectiveness out of them. And you'll see the additional point benefit you get for those various upgraded items. Once you've upgraded your equipment to the max, you'll see a nice little indicator showing that it's maxed out. So if you have another piece of equipment that looks like it might be better than what you have, you can start leveling that up, or you can keep what you have for the most amount of protection that you want at the moment. So that's essentially about it. You do get various other quests for your party as well. So if you see that there's other missions and you've gotten to the point where you can use your crew, you can send them out on other missions to collect money or mine different things or get information, that sort of thing. So you'll also get a countdown timer. The initial ones take about half an hour, so just a point of reference there as far as how long those missions take. So definitely worth playing. I really do enjoy the graphics. They're pretty, very clean. The game moves really smoothly. It does have the standard pinch in to zoom in, or pinch in to zoom out and pinch out to zoom in. So if you need to adjust exactly how close you want to be to the action, you can do that as well. So definitely worth a shot. The game is free and available for Android and iOS. I'll have a link in the show notes in case you want to see the video preview that I did of playing the game and showing off some of the different features. So worth a check there as well. So that's really all there is for that. So with that, I'll jump into this week's TV review. So I was able to finally finish watching the second season of Extant. So I thought I would do a review of both seasons as a whole, especially since both of the seasons kind of blend into each other. And while the first season didn't really have a major cliffhanger that I can recall offhand, the second one actually did have more of a cliffhanger, so I figured it would go together. So the show released in the United States on July 9th, 2014. I believe it airs on CBS and shows up on Amazon Instant Video shortly thereafter, a few days after the episodes air, so I was able to not be too far behind. Each episode runs about 40 to 45 minutes, except for, I think, the season 2 premiere or the season 2 finale, which was an hour and a half. A summary of the show, though, is that an astronaut struggles to learn how she became pregnant while on a 13-month-long solo space mission. So the first season is kind of the effect of that pregnancy and the fallout for what's going on in her life. And the second season is the repercussions later on as we learn more about her pregnancy and the aftermath of that. It was created by Mickey Fisher. I didn't see him do too much else. He's basically known for Extant, so if you like it, it's a good spot on his resume in your eyes. As of the last time I checked, it's getting a rating on IMDb at about 67%. So, generally well, or more positively favored than bad, but not a perfect, not very well. Or not, like, you know, superb or anything like that. For me, I will say off the top that the pacing on the show seems kind of weird and kind of slow as far as how many episodes and how far we've gotten. So there are a few things here and there which I would have liked more of. So after the review, I will talk about that a little bit more. But I will say that I would put the rating around there, maybe 75% or so at most. Mostly because it could be, or they could have a lot more in the show, but it seems like they're taking it up to that point, but then not going quite far enough. So as far as reviewing the show, overall, I actually like the formatting of the show, where they have a good inclusion of information in the present day with quick flashbacks as needed. So we find out what's going on now with the current impact of the story, what each character is up to. And then as far as filling in the information for each character's past, they bring in flashbacks as it's needed, and they're not necessarily long flashbacks, so maybe at most maybe a couple of minutes, so we kind of find out what's going on, but not to the point where it's annoying, where we have half an episode just of flashbacks that are spotted or spent or put randomly throughout the seasons and episodes. So they're actually useful flashbacks rather than everything all together and then having to go back and remember if it's actually shown or not. The one storyline that I actually did like the most was the pacing of Ethan, the humanic, who plays the son, or the son who plays who's the humanic character as a son of Ethan, or as Molly Woods and John Woods. So I actually liked how we see how he's learning, what his progression, what his reactions are, the inclusion of certain child emotions into his programming, his difficulty with how his difficulty with trust and human honesty, white lies, exaggerations, things like that, and how he can't even trust other humanic robots, and why other humanics like Lucy are different from him. The Lucy storyline, speaking of humanics, was actually also pretty good. I liked how it progressed across the two seasons. So if it seemed kind of incomplete in the first half, they actually were able to make it up in the second half. It was pretty good development, not as much as we see in Ethan. We do see how it's incomplete and how she starts to take control of things or take things into her own hands. But I think in this case, while Ethan had a limited interaction, so it was basically the two scientists in the lab and then Molly and John as the parents, as far as input and interactions, and then limited other characters like Molly's father, Lucy had more interactions with a more variety of people, namely the Secretary of State, Taylor and the scientists, and then Molly and John and everybody. So it seems like she, with all the different variables going around, it was more confusing and it was easier for her programming to be impacted. So that's kind of the fallout there. The one downside that I didn't really like in the show was that there was very little information brought on early as far as John's partner in creating the humanics. So it seemed like when they started talking about him, it seemed kind of extra or kind of random as far as what basically, it just seemed like he was added on as an afterthought as John suddenly had this mysterious partner. Granted, it would have been... It's one of those things that one probably could have seen coming, but it was also one of those things where John was... There were events early on in the season, in season one, where it seemed like John was a creator and he was the only person who knew what was going on, and all the other scientists were there because they were smart enough. So I don't know, to me it seems like it could have been, rather than having the secret co-creator of the Humanics, maybe have that same message that was programmed into Ethan be hidden security measure, but some more stored away, or that came up later, something along those lines, or just have more information of that co-creator. And finally, the one thing I wish I definitely had more of, which maybe we'll see in future seasons. I don't know if there's going to be a season 3. I think there was a note of mention of it somewhere, but I actually kind of wanted more progression on the hybrid storyline. So we do have the hybrid grouping together, staying off the grid, them growing up and kind of learning what they can and can't do, and seeing the progression of their abilities, but maybe have a hint or close out the season as far as why they shed and what powers they get. We know that they do get stronger or more powerful, or something changes when they shed, so maybe learn more about that, or maybe we know why how their powers work, or there's some sort of intuition and growth and all of that. I imagine it's probably something that was built into Molly's son, Adu, who is the source of all of it. But I guess maybe that's going to be for the next season or something, where we kind of see that progression of how the hybrids were created, where they come from, what their abilities and powers are, what happened to their planet and all of that stuff. So overall, I give the show probably about a 70-80%. Just because there wasn't, to me, there didn't seem like an equal amount of progression given to all the different storylines. So we did see a lot of Ethan's progression in season one. I probably would have wanted to see more of the progression in Lucy, or find out more about, or have a little bit more progression on the hybrid storyline as far as their hideouts, or just have more of what Adu was doing while he was growing and shedding, and kind of his whole need to get or expand the hybrid race. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. It's not perfect, but it is definitely worth watching. I do recommend watching it. So if you do have Amazon Instant Video, I'm not sure if it's on Netflix just yet, but it is on CBS's website as well. So definitely worth watching if you got some time. So check it out. So that is all for that. So with that, I'll jump into this week's Star Wars profile. As far as how things look go, mergers and acquisitions, entities changing their name and things like that, the one thing in Star Wars that comes to mind, or the first thing that came to mind especially, was the Galactic Empire. So if you haven't seen the prequels, or you haven't really read the novelization for the original trilogy, I don't think it was said too much as far as what happened with the, or how the Empire came about. I think it was in the introductory scrolls, but that's about it. But the Galactic Empire wasn't always that, so I thought I'd do a review of how it came into play and the influencing factors for the transition. So the Galactic Empire was founded 19 years before the Battle of Yavin. It was transitioned into an empire at the end of the Clone Wars from the Galactic Republic by the Emperor to essentially take control of the Republic under Sith rule. It was led by Emperor Palpatine, or Chancellor Palpatine, depending on what role he was playing at in different environments. But it was also ruled by this in various sectors by governors, moffs, and grand moffs. So governors had control of, for example, of planets and sectors. Moffs had control of multiple sectors, and moffs had control over systems and regions. So kind of that whole bureaucratic and imperial rule by a very structured hierarchy. So if anything needed to be done, it had to follow the proper chain of command. A bit of background as far as the events go leading up to the creation of the Empire was that basically the at the time, Senator Palpatine was elected as Chancellor due to the due to the prior Chancellor Valorum's inability to deal with the crisis on Naboo. It was all theatrics and game playing by Palpatine to ensure that he got elected Chancellor and used that to his advantage. He later used his power to gain emergency powers with dealing with a separatist threat. They were basically disgruntled systems who were not too happy with how the Republic was dealing with their issues, so they founded their own government. This led into the start of the Clone Wars because of the creation of the droid army. So the Republic needed a way to counteract this, and as it turns out by Obi-Wan's discovery that a prior Jedi Master had started a clone army to help the Republic in his time of need. Towards the end of the Clone Wars, though, as the Chancellor was gaining more and more emergency powers, he used the attack by the four Jedi Masters on him as a reason to make it present the case to in his favor that the Jedi were trying to take over the Republic, and he branded them enemies of the state and traitors, and he used this as a final reason to create the Empire, name him the Emperor, and ensure that a future threats would never take hold in the Empire again, and maintain direct control and all of that stuff, which we see in the new trilogy. So that's kind of where how that transition happened, and then he used his Sith abilities and the fact that he was probably one of the more powerful Sith Lord to maintain this control. The essential job of the Empire, as general functions go, was to rule through the threat of fear and have a backbone military to follow through on these threats as needed. So that's why once the Empire was formed, stormtroopers and starships were continued to be built and expanded into various systems to maintain order and control, and then also used the Death Star as the final point of military might to go around the galaxy and silence any voices that were opposed to the Empire. I know I read a while back as well, that I'm not sure if it's still up there, that the Emperor wanted to also create a series of Death Stars that were under the control of the Grand Moff, so as needed they could go to or have immediate and direct control and enforce their will as needed much more quickly, rather than rely on one Death Star to go around the system. A notable achievement, though, of the Imperial Navy was that at its peak, the Empire had 26,000 Star Destroyers in its control to maintain the order and control. After the Battle of Endor, though, the Star Destroyers were split among different factions that differed on how the Empire should continue. So basically, since the Emperor was killed, Darth Vader was killed, there was no Death Star to maintain that order that way. Different leaders were, basically different Imperial commanders were out and about to say, to basically say that their voice was the best way to maintain the control. So that's kind of how, where the Empire struggled in the aftermath. There was, I believe, something along the lines of a new Empire created later, because, I believe it was Admiral Dalla, the lover of, Grand Moff Tarkin, who was able to defeat her rivals, use the Navy to maintain order and control and that sort of thing. But other than that, to get to that time, though, there was a great deal of time where the New Republic rose, and then since those all the Star Destroyers and various models and early versions of the Death Star were still out and about, that the New Republic's war continued to fight on. So that's really all there is for that. So if you want to get in touch with me, have any questions, comments, concerns, anything like that, you can always email me at headphonesneil@yahoo.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 714-451-6574 or find me on Twitter at patelN01. And of course, you can get all links to prior episodes, subscribe on iTunes, RSS, Stitcher, the Patreon and all of that at patelN01.com. And of course, you can get this show or any show on the Geek.io network by visiting geek-io.net. But that is all for this particular episode. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time.